Monster Man, Episode 256, Swan to Swordfish. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are completing our journey through the S chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. First up on the list, we've got the swan. It's a big bird that lives on the water. I'm of two minds about the swan as a monster, because on the one hand, this is a bird that you are relatively unlikely to fight. I know, everyone who lives in a town with a river, and that includes me, likes to tell you that swans are in fact quite menacing. I used to cross, there's a bridge in Cambridge, Green Dragon Bridge, that I used to cross on my way home a lot. And so I crossed the river late at night, and there would be these swans just like, there. You know, not doing anything, just kind of floating on the water in the dark. And it was quite an eerie sort of image. Swans can be quite imposing. I mean, they're large birds, they got a big wingspan, and they do this cool thing where they kind of like use their wings like sails and glide on the water when it's windy. There was a notorious swan on that stretch of the river who was referred to as Mr. Asbo, a name that only my UK listeners will get, but that basically means that he was very aggressive and bad-tempered, and he would sort of threaten boaters. But for the most part, Mr. Asbo aside, swans are okay unless they're provoked. Now, if you're a low-level old-school D&D character, or me, then chances are that you have a dog. And my dog in particular loves water. You know, Labradors are known for this. She loves to, like, splash in the river. She loves to swim. She's very aquatic. She loves to play in puddles. And so going down by the riverbank, that means you sometimes run into waterfowl, and she, you know, will occasionally frighten a goose or whatever, or a goose will. She doesn't seem to get scared very easily, so at one point, we were taking her on a walk and going along the river, and she went down to the river's edge, and there was a swan there, and Pepper was just like, oh, an animal I can be friends with, and that is not how the swan felt about it. And swans are quite intimidating when they start to do their, like, threat displays, but I don't think that Pepper knew what was happening, so we had to pull her back and take her away and tell her that, you know, that bird didn't want to be friends, and that's okay, it doesn't mean you're bad if the bird doesn't want to be friends with you. I guess swans are quite threatening, and so therefore it has a reputation as one of those animals that looks harmless and friendly but is actually quite dangerous. You can probably get one fun swan fight in a D&D game. Maybe you're like waiting for the bullywugs to come and you're like hiding in your sort of like little duck blind in the marsh, and like a swan comes up and is trying to get some of your bread or whatever. I mean, it's fun. It's not essential to the campaign, but it can be fun. Next up, we have the Swan May or Swan Maiden. These are figures that appear in kind of mainly like Scandinavian and German folklore. They're basically flying selkies. That is to say that they are magical creatures who transform into swans with the aid of a magical charm of some kind, typically a cloak or other garment of swan feathers, although it might be a ring that appears in the form of a bracelet or like anklet, like a little band on the swan when in bird form. Most people are probably familiar with the idea of the Swan May from the ballet Swan Lake. Actually, I only found out while researching this episode that that is the plot of Swan Lake, that it's about these princesses or young ladies anyway who get turned into swans. I had no idea. It's kind of like the stereotypical ballet, right? Like if you see a ballet being performed in a movie, it's often Swan Lake, but I genuinely had no clue what it was about. So that's what it's about. I'm mainly familiar with the Swan May from the Old Norse poem Völundarkvida, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but it's a poem about Völund, or Wayland, the smith, and he and his two brothers spy some swan maidens who are bathing, and they do the selkie thing where they, like, hide their feather cloaks and get them to marry them. There are stories of male characters being turned into swans. It says in the Swan May thing that they're all female, but that's actually, there are folk tales or fairy tales where male characters get turned into swans. There it's usually interpreted as a curse rather than just like a thing that they can do. The idea of having a feather cloak that turns into a bird is not uncommon in Norse mythology. The goddess Freya also has one, although I don't think it turns her into a swan. And there's a Swan May character in the Winter of the World books by Michael Scott Rohan. The main hero's sort of love interest is a Swan May. So Swan Maidens are fine. They have this problem, I mean, I say problem, is not immediately obvious kind of what they do in a game, right? They're solitary creatures. They're not hostile. They tend to kind of just, like, hang out in and around bodies of water and be, like, hermits and whatever. They're good and they don't like evil, and so they might turn up to ask the characters for help with some kind of threat to their habitat or to their community. I don't know. But that's kind of it. That's sort of true of anybody. You know, there's nothing, there doesn't seem to be anything particularly about being a Swan Mei that has, like, narrative potential that other similar creatures don't. And, I mean, I guess they're just, you know, you do the same thing with them that you would with Selkies. I don't immediately know what you do with Selkies in a D&D game. To be perfectly honest with you, they just seem like they might be druids. They seem like they would be good player characters. Obviously, you probably don't want someone who can turn into a flying creature at low level, because it's a big power imbalance with the rest of the party, the ability to fly. So all you would do is start out by saying, well, yeah, okay, you are a Swan Mei, but some bad person stole your magical swan cloak, so getting it back is one of your goals. And then when they eventually get it back, then they would gain the ability to turn into a swan form. That'd be kind of cool. Again, you could say the same thing with a Selkie. Other than that, although they're really interesting, and although they are part of Scandinavian and other parts of Northern European folklore, they seem more interesting as characters than as monsters, I guess. Finally, we have the swordfish. Now, it's going to astound you to learn that swordfish are not particularly aggressive. It says here that if they're, like, controlled or trained, they can be dangerous and attack you with their nose swords. And swordfish can get quite big. You know, if you were floating in the water and, like, a crazy swordfish, you know, a swordfish that it was driven wild with anger or was under some kind of, like, fish control power, tried to run you through with his sword, it would stop being funny pretty fast. Well, actually, it would be terrifying. But to anybody looking at you, it would still be funny, because ultimately, it's still a swordfish. It just, unfortunately, it's kind of ridiculous. And it also says that they can do this if they're trained, like someone has trained swordfish to attack people. I just want you to think about that training process. Like, of all the animals in the sea that you could train to attack people, you decided swordfish. Not stingrays, not Portuguese men-o-war, not sharks, swordfish. You can include this, and it can genuinely be kind of funny, but you have to remember an all-important lesson for ridiculous novelty monsters, which is that if you include trained swordfish in your D&D campaign, your D&D campaign is now the kind of campaign that has trained swordfish in it. That is a door that once you have opened it, there is no closing. Nobody is going to be like, well, you know what, I say that. The truth is that we often remember sequential stories that have ridiculous elements and just kind of forget them, right? Like, when you watch, like, a serious moment in a later Star Trek film, you're not thinking, oh yeah, that guy once met Abraham Lincoln in space. You know what I mean? You just kind of brush it out of your mind. But at the same time, you don't want to be the DM responsible for the episode that everyone just kind of brushes out of their mind when they're thinking back on their beloved character and that character's heroic deeds, right? So the trained or aggressive swordfish is a genuinely great comedy monster, but, you know, you have to be very conscious about the choice to use comedy monsters. If you do, that's fine. But I wouldn't try to include it in a part of your campaign that you were hoping for the players to, like, engage with dramatically and seriously. All right, that is all the monsters that we have time for today, and that is all the monsters in the S chapter. There were so many. This is like a D chapter level of stuff, and we're going to be moving on into the T chapter starting next week. I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to see what it's got in store for us here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.